Good afternoon. I will now call this meeting of the Senate Transportation Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:34 p.m. on Thursday, February 20th, 2024. Let the record also reflect that we have a quorum. Present today is Vice Chair David Wilson, Senator Lukey Tobin, Senator Jesse Keel, Senator Rob Myers, and myself, James Kaufman. Staffing the committee today is our LIO moderator, Dylan Williams, and Lisa Denny from Records. Also, our Transportation Committee aide, Ms. Emma Torkelson. At this time, I'd like to warn everybody about your cell phones. I'm checking mine. Check. Ringer's off. And today's agenda will consist of two items. We're going to hear SB 199 by rules, by request of the governor, and then we'll also get to EO 131 by the governor. Before we get started, I want to let anyone know online in particular that we'll be starting public testimony of the EO 131 related to the Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board at the end of this meeting. Anyone we are not able to get to today will have another opportunity to testify at this committee coming on Thursday the 22nd at 1:30. Written testimony can also be sent to submitted to stra@akleg.gov. That's stra@akleg. That's our committee email address. So SB 199. First up, we'll have SB 199. We heard this bill on Tuesday, February 13th. We heard a bill introduction, open and close public testimony, and set the bill aside. Today, it is my intention to consider a Transportation Committee substitute, open a discussion, and then look at the will of the committee. With that, we have several folks here from the Division of Mining, Land, and Water. We have the Director of Finance Support Services, Department of Education, Acting Facilities Manager, Department of Education, and Statewide Real Estate Right-of-Way Chief. So we have a full slate of support here if we have any questions coming up. And so with that, are there any questions before we move on? Thank you. None noted. So with the amendment deadline for SB 199 yesterday, we received amendments but ended up ultimately processing the committee substitute. So with that, do we have a motion to move the committee substitute?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt Transportation Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 199, Work Order 33-GS2634/B as in Bravo as our working document.
And I will object for the purposes of discussion and invite Emma Torkelson, our Transportation Committee, to come forward and explain the summary of changes.
Thank you, Chair Kaufman and members of the Senate Transportation Committee. For the record, Emma Torkelson, staff to Senator Kaufman and the Transportation Committee. These changes in this proposed CS incorporate all four amendments we received as of yesterday. I'll work my way through them and can answer technical questions, but otherwise we'll refer to the senator who brought the amendment to us for further questions. To start with, there was a title change, adds relating to the acceptance of gifts, donations, and grants by the Department of Natural Resources relating to the accounting for certain program receipts to the title. Section 3, page 4, lines 11 through 19, requires the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities to offer the land that they have determined fit for disposal to DNR before they can dispose of the land themselves. DNR has 45 days to accept, reject, or ignore the offer. If the offer is not accepted within the 45 days, DOT PNF can dispose of the land according to standards established by the DNR commissioner. Section 4, page 4, lines 22 through 24, and section 8, lines 10 through 22, authorizes the Department of Natural Resources to accept gifts, donations, grants, to the department for the purpose of providing signage for an asset under the control of the department in accordance with a memorandum of understanding agreed upon by the donor and the department. Section 13, page 8, lines 15 through 16 clarifies that if requested in this section refers to a requested hearing under D of this section. Section 17, page 14, lines 1 through 12 requires DNR to prepare a report for each property deemed appropriate for commercial development that describes the municipal and state government services that the commissioner anticipates would be required and the municipal and state tax revenue that would be required to provide those services in an identified area if the land is commercially developed. And then the final line here, there's minor technical changes that were made to a number of sections and pages. I've listed them here. I won't read them, but they're all technical and conforming changes that legal makes to any bill that hasn't gone through their drafting process to start with, but it's all just minor.
All right. Thank you very much, Ms. Torkelson. Are there any questions for Ms. Torkelson? Senator Wilson.
Yeah, I have a question on the Section 17 about the report. Is the intent here would be DNR would only have to know if ahead of time if the land was going to be purchased for other commercial uses. At the time, normally DNR would just sell the land to an owner. They wouldn't necessarily prep that for commercial development, right? I'm just trying to understand the...
Through the chair to Senator Wilson, I'll defer that question either to the department or to Senator Myers, who brought forward that change, if one of you could clarify.
Senator Myers?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the purpose of that amendment is recognizing that economic development usually leads to an increased necessity of government services, you know, more kids in school, more road maintenance, et cetera, and recognizing in an economic opportunity zone that there could potentially be less tax revenue coming off of that new economic activity. Thought it would be prudent to just say if the state is going to sell land that's in one of those economic opportunity zones, that they prepare a report saying roughly what do we think is going to happen here if this is developed in terms of increased government services, how much it's going to cost roughly, and to say whether or not the new tax revenue is going to meet that or not. We're not requiring anybody to pay anything. We're just trying to project ahead to say what's going to be the impact on the community, because if somebody in a community is going to see economic development, but then that's going to increase their tax bills because the economic development is not paying for itself in terms of additional tax revenue, then that I think that's something that people should want to know about.
Thank you.
Follow up? All right. Thank you. Do we have any other questions? Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure if this is going to be for Senator Wilson or for perhaps DNR. I'm a little concerned about I realize I'm going to sound a little bit like a hypocrite here at first because of a bill I ran a couple of years ago. I'm a little bit concerned about the language saying that the department can accept gifts and donations for signage, Mr. President, or Mr. Chair. Sorry, I tried to promote you there. I'd like to hear from DNR about what authority they have to name things. Because it could lead to an interesting conflict there if they accept a donation.
Okay. Yes, please approach. Place yourself on the record. Thank you.
Through the chair for the record, this is Christy Cullis. I'm the director for the Division of Mine, Land, and Water, Department of Natural Resources. Through the chair, Senator Myers. So we don't have any kind of authority beyond like our subdivisions we name, or if we were to establish a trail for naming conventions, who actually names like mountains or lakes or rivers, that would be something I'd have to get back to the committee on.
Or if Senator Wilson wants to respond, I'll defer. But Mr. Chair, what I'm concerned about is because when we ran our bill for DOT to do this a couple of years ago, having DNR have that authority as well is something that came up. But what came up in that discussion was that DOT can't name anything on its own. It all has to go through the legislature. But it was my understanding at the time from DNR that there were certain things such as trails that they could name on their own. And I don't want to put us in a situation where somebody says, here's $10,000 for the signs if you name this trail after my uncle, or something to that effect. That's my concern.
Senator Wilson is the maker of the amendment.
Would yeah.
Like to address?
That sounds like a great revenue opportunity. I didn't even think about that. but DOT does have this, and DNR did have this authority in this year's budget as well. So we're just expanding this in perpetuity and giving the same authority that DOT has for options. The purpose was for no trespassing, no dumping, or sign replacements that have been vandalized or took down that local communities would like to go ahead and replace. A community, Senate district adjacent to mine, had concerns on DNR property, and the community is willing to go ahead and put forth funding to replace signs. And so having something like this in statute to help those community members to allow DNR to accept those donations and gifts for that signage felt appropriate to do. I mean, this is something that would be a no cost to the state. And so we're just looking for that wonderful public-private partnership to replace signs or things that get damaged or wear use in time that DNR may not have available in their time to or budget to go ahead and do that time frame that would hopefully have a more expedient process.
Mr. Chair, I'll just say that the intent that Senator Wilson is expressing, I'm 100% in favor of. I'm just trying to make sure that we don't accidentally create a loophole here that somebody may be may exploit later on and we may regret.
Is this an amendment that you would like to propose once we adopt the committee substitute?
I would look to see if there is any other anybody else on the committee shares my concern whether or not I would go that direction. So I'd like to continue the conversation about it before I make anything formal like that.
And I would also just like to add, I mean, I think that no one's going to say, hey, look at, you know, Mount Myers and call it Denali and pay for a sign. I think DNR will have a good process to make sure that we're not naming just conventional processes, that there's a process in place. And that they would also develop the regs necessary for the signage as well. I mean, I don't think that they can just go willy-nilly naming items, as representative just spoke to. So I don't think this will be abused by public members to just name things, and that will go through a proper process.
Ms. Collis, do you have any comment on this?
Through the chair, Christy Collis, director for Mining, Land, and Water. We do not have the authority to name any major landmarks. That is beyond our scope. I can't say who exactly has that authority, but it does not rest with the Division of Mining, Land, and Water or the department solely.
Mr. Chair, it's my understanding that naming a mountain or a lake or something like that's up to the federal government, and so on. I'm not suggesting that something like that would happen here, but something, for example, a trail that the state creates and controls would be potentially a problem.
Noted. Senator Keel, do you have?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was actually going to ask the department if they had policies and procedures, I imagine, especially in state parks, that govern the naming of trails, of cabins. I know in the past, those things get names. I presume that there are safeguards in place to avoid sophomoric prank names. Can anyone from the department explain what the rules are today?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I don't have all the rules in front of me, but I do have experience with, let's say, the Kinnick public use area. We developed a shooting range there, and we did name that facility off of a community member that was really heavily involved, but that was a facility that we were developing. So typically it's more like those types of situations that we might name the shooting range, the Kinney Barber shooting range, because of their input into helping us with managing the area. It takes a community to help us a lot of times with some of these areas. So, but when it comes to other larger type projects, that's not something that I can really speak to without having someone with more expertise online.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I see a lot of value in this provision. I'm happy to follow up and work with the department to make sure that they have good processes in place. But I think about the Rupe Andrews Cabin. I think about state historic sites that are sometimes within neighborhoods and neighborhoods we want to get involved in and help with signage. So I see positives here, and I'm sure we can, I'm pretty confident we can take care of working with the department on naming policies as well.
Thank you. Yes, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So knowing that other members of the committee sit on other committees that this bill is heading to next. I think I'm happy that I just put the concern on the record. There's plenty of time for this to come out later for the department to make sure that this concern is addressed either in the bill or in regulation. And so I'm happy leaving it where it is right now.
Great. All right. Any further objections or discussions with respect to adopting the CS? Seeing none, the committee substitute for SB 199 version B. I remove my objection. Yes, thanks. It has been adopted as our working document. So are there further discussions from committee members now that we have adopted the CS?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I didn't mean to jump in line here. If we can invite the department back up to the dais, I had a good conversation regarding some of the concerns from my district that we've received some public comments regarding. And I'm just hopeful that you might be able to expound a bit on some of the resources that you provided to the committee on your February 19th memo and talk a little bit more to help alleviate concerns around potential shifts in transportation planning in or around Senate District I particularly.
Great. Through the chair, Senator Tobin, I'd actually like to call on Rachel Longacre, who's online, who wanted to speak to this.
Ms.
Good afternoon. Yes, through the chair, this is Rachel Longacre for the record. We did speak at length and we did provide both maps and documentation for your district in particular. The areas of concern for the qualified opportunity zones in the commercial, that'd be a DNR authority. Those would have to go through a very public process if they were to be considered under a lease to sale. However, in your area, there is not any settlement land that would be available for that program. There is land in that area that has been transferred and conveyed fully to the municipality of Anchorage that could be considered under their authorities, but again, that doesn't affect DNR or DOT. And then in regards to any land that DOT may have considered, it would not be affected by the statute as this is amending Title 35. Those right-of-way corridors that we spoke about, those are all under a different title.
Thank you. That is very helpful. And I hope, actually, I know many of my constituents who are listening appreciate that.
Senator Myers?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've also got a question. Follow up from some of the questions that were answered in written form here. It was stated that for land to be conveyed out, it's got to be listed as settlement land, but you've got a lot of classifications here. So things like heritage resource land, wildlife habitat land, transportation corridor land, that makes sense that the state holds on to those. But a couple of these, I kind of wonder why those aren't also available for sale. Agricultural land, I would think that would be top of the list that we want to sell that out, get that into use. One or two others of the 11 categories or something on here. I'm curious why it has to be classified as settlement land first.
Through the chair, this is Christy Collis, director for the Division of Mineland and Water. Senator Myers. So actually, agricultural land can be conveyed out. I know it's a little confusing, but because that it has to be specifically for agriculture purposes. And so there are different types that we could convey for very specific uses. Reserved use is one that was on the map that we provided, and that one needs to be used for conveying to municipalities or to other state agencies. And so it's not always settlement is more specifically for residential use, personal use, where some of the other ones are for other specific uses that can be conveyed.
Okay.
Any further questions, comments? Senator Keel.
Mr. Chairman, one thing that I look to clarify and may not have effectively clarified is on the top of, I think, page 4. I just scrolled away from it, of course, before I started talking. On page 4, one change in the bill that I think needs a conceptual amendment. I don't have it in writing, so I think it has to be a conceptual amendment. The change that Ms. Torkelson described, the goal was to set a clear order of operations for when DOT has public works land they're looking to get rid of. But if you look at line 12, the last word on line 12 is may. And I think we need to clarify that this order of operations, DOT is done with it, so they offer it to DNR. DNR has 45 days to say either yes, no, or lose the opportunity. And then if DNR says no or loses the opportunity, then DOT may sell it. I think we need to change that may at the end of line 12 to something non-discretionary. So if now is an appropriate time, Mr. Chairman, I would move that as a conceptual amendment.
So you do move that?
I do move that as a conceptual amendment.
I'll object for purposes of discussion.
I just want clarity. So Senator Kill, are you, through the chair, are you asking that may to become a shall?
Mr. Chairman, I think that's the clearest way to do it, yes.
Okay, I just want to be clear on the amendment. So it's to change on page 4, line 12, the department shall offer land to the DNR.
And if we would, just again, once for the record, make sure that we clearly describe this. So would you describe your amendment in those terms for legislative and legal service?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to state it clearly, on page 4 at the end of line 12, change the may to shall so that there is a clear order of operations for when DOT is no longer needs public works land. They would offer it to DNR. If DNR says yes, the department would not have discretion. They would transfer it to DNR. DNR says no or allows the 45-day limit to expire, then DOT would have discretion to, as you see there, lease, sell, et cetera, otherwise dispose of that land.
Thank you. I'll object just for the purpose of discussion. Do we have any concern from the department about this conceptual amendment?
This is Christy Collis, the director for the Division of Mineland and Water, through the chair. No, we're neutral on this amendment.
Thank you very much. Any discussion on this conceptual amendment? So I will remove my objection. And now to the amendment as amended. Brief at ease. We're back on the record, and thank you. Just to clarify, just to be sure we've got this, so I'm going to say thank you, Senator Keel. I remove my objection from the conceptual amendment. And are there any further objections? None noted for the record. Seeing none, conceptual amendment 1 passes, and I authorize brief at ease. I authorize legislative and legal services to make any conforming changes. So thank you. All right. With that, we're back on the amendment itself, I believe. And are there any further questions on passing the brief at ease?
Yes.
So back on the record seeing no further questions, Senator Wilson, do I have a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move the CS for Senate Bill 199, Work Order 33, G-GS0606/A as conceptually amended from committee with individual recommendations and attached physical notes. B. 2634. So BACS 33GS2634 version A as conceptually amended from B as amended with individual recommendations, accompanying physical notes, and again allow Lawyers Legal to conform any conceptual changes needed for this piece of legislation.
Thank you very much. With that, SB 199 version B moves from, as conceptually amended, moves from committee, and I authorize legislative legal to make technical conforming changes. With that, we will now take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. Mercy. That we're back on the record, and next we'll take up Executive Order 131. This is the first hearing of EO 131. Today is my intention to hear an introduction, take questions from committee members, open public testimony, and then hold the EO for further consideration. So now I'd like to invite our presenters from the Department of Transportation and the Department of Law to join us at the table. Please approach, state your name, affiliation, workstation for the record, and give us an introduction of the executive order.
For the record, Andy Mills, Special Assistant and Legislative Liaison for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to cover Executive Order 131. Commissioner Anderson will be here shortly. He was in another matter and on his way. But in the meantime, I will be happy to cover the quick overview on this one. Executive Order 131 seeks to modify, reorganize the Alaska Marine Operations Board. And that is a board with appointing powers from both the Senate President and the Speaker of the House, two members each. This reorganization seeks to have the governor appoint all members of that board, as is done with the Aviation Advisory Board and other boards as well. I'm happy to go through a sectional. I know we have quite a bit more to talk about from different aspects of this, from a legal aspect, as there is a Ledge Legal memo for us to cover, I believe, from a policy perspective, which I believe the commissioner is happy to cover, and from a practical standpoint, as I have facilitated the board the last year. Of course, it's been in existence for 2 years, but happy to provide additional context, but I'll pause there for a moment with the commissioner.
Sure. Please place yourself on the record.
Yeah, Chair Kaufman, for the record, my name is Ryan Anderson. I'm the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities Commissioner.
Thank you very much. So, Ms. Mills, if you would please brief through the sectional, if you would.
Again, for the record, Andy Mills, DOT. The sectional for Executive Order 131 starts with Section 1, which adds the uncodified law of the state of Alaska that the governor finds it is in the interest of efficient administration to reorganize the Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board. Section 2 modifies AS 1965-120A, which is the composition of the board, and modifies the appointing powers to that of the governor. Section 3 modifies AS 1965-120C, which is, again, a reference to the membership of the board on staggered terms and six-year terms. And those, again, are modified for the governor to make all appointments and cover vacancies. Section 4 is uncodified law, which speaks to the transition of the EO, should it take effect. And Section 5 is the effective date, which is July 1st of 2024.
Thank you. Any further comments or statements to make at this point before questions?
Yeah, if I could, Chair Kaufman. You know, thank you for this opportunity to be here in front of the Senate Transportation Committee. I'd just like to say a few things about this executive order. Number one, you know, the governor, the administration supports the Alaska Marine Highway Transportation System. This has been demonstrated, I think, through multiple ways, particularly in the operation budgets, the authorizations of those. The capital budgets these days are, you know, something that we haven't seen in years and years, the investments that are being made, as well as in the support, the three maritime unions, the successful union negotiations from the past year also was a showing of support. We recognize this board and its importance. It's, you know, being established in Title 19. It really is critical to DOT in establishing the short and long range planning of the Alaska Marine Highway System. And we recognize that. And we feel that it's a board that has to continue to make to serve that function, to get to improve the Alaska Marine Highway System in both service and reliability. One point to make, I think, is that, as you can see in the executive order, this bill does not change the number of members in the Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board or the board member requirements. It simply requires that all board members are appointed by the governor. The governor, myself, and I believe all Alaska would like to see this operations board, you know, contribute meaningfully to improvements in service and reliability for the Alaska Marine Highway System. We feel that the dynamics of the board have prevented it from performing many of the statutory duties. One example of this is about a year ago, it was recognized that the dynamics of the board was preventing the Alaska Marine Highway System to provide recommendations concerning the operation and management of the system. But also, one of the statutory duties is to provide a strategic plan for the Alaska Marine Highway System. We sent out a letter, I sent out a letter, reminding the board of these duties, as well as the urgency about a year ago, I believe it was February 8th, at this time, how important those recommendations could be for the department. We never did receive any recommendations from the board on that regard. I do want to say that this action does not denigrate the board's work to date, or the board members who have worked to contribute on that board. We have a lot of respect for those board members. This action is focused on the dynamics of the board and how we feel at a policy level, boards such as the State of Alaska's Aviation Advisory Board or the Governor's Advisory Board on Roads and Highways are more successful and more aligned in providing meaningful advice to the department. And that, from the policy perspective, is our statement. There's also a practical perspective that we could also discuss if the board would like.
Thank you very much. Have any questions? Mr. Kiel, or Senator Kiel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, as I look at the Aviation Advisory Board website, I don't see a short-term plan, long-term plan, and a strategic plan on that website. So help me understand how they're the example that we should be looking to for the MHOB to follow if they haven't done the things, two out of the three things the MHOB has done.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Kiel, there's no doubt that the board's statutory duties are different. That is absolutely a true statement. Our point is that the dynamics of the board, how the board functions and makes progress. For the Aviation Advisory Board, we have received numerous recommendations, you know, moving forward and advice. On the Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board, we haven't received as much.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, I appreciate your observations. I think the word dynamics has come up multiple times here, and I don't know what that means in this context.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Kiel, I think the word dynamics is in a lot of ways tied to the interpersonal interactions on the board. It can be tied to what is being worked on the board and how individuals and board members may be contributing to that work. It just appears alignment is a word that I think of quite a bit when we're talking about these boards, that, you know, boards that are aligned, that come together, move things forward quickly, in my experience.
Mr. Yes, thank you. I appreciate the commissioner's observations. I will say that over the last 2.5 decades or so, I have often seen Marine Highway System leadership closely aligned and blowing whichever way the wind blows on a given day, making tens or hundreds of millions of dollars of decisions sometimes in ways that have turned out to be inefficient, sometimes in ways that have turned out to be failures. Quickly achieving alignment may not be in the best interest of the system at all.
Senator Meyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Little bit of comment, a little bit of question. I'm curious to hear the department's reaction. I'm hearing the word advisory a lot. I see it in the legal opinion. And I really kind of wonder if advisory is the correct word for what we're talking about here. The board that this that the AMHOB superseded, I think advisory was probably the correct word. But we're talking about, as was already mentioned, coming up with a short-term plan, a long-term plan. And while those don't, you know, carry the force of law, they still have to be approved in the budget by the legislature. It does seem to me that we're talking about a lot more than just we're going to take this under advisement from the department. And so maybe if you could expand on that and the relationship between the MHOB and the board, is advisory really the word that we should be using to describe what's coming from the board?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Myers, I'll let Mr. Mills speak a bit to that. I know he's been very much involved with the board as it's progressed.
Again, for the record, Andy Mills. Through the chair, Senator Myers, thank you for making that observation, because we believe that's accurate and it's in the name. In fact, Marine Highway Operations Board. And if you look at the statutory duties of that board, again, work we've done with this committee and others to try and work on the dynamics of the board. I know that it is very clear that there's a line on advisory that we are at least at, if not over, in what we are coordinating with the board to do. And again, it's been, I know we had conversations when HB 63, which is the predicate to reestablishing this board and sunsetting MTAB, that we did talk about that dynamic. And at that time in Senate Transportation, there we were having conversations about this very subject. Are we sure that this is not over getting into different territory? And we did try to affirm on the record there that this would be advisory, but I have had plenty of conversations about folks saying that this should be more than advisory, that we should be treating it as such. And again, we've attempted to cite back to statute that and the previous conversations that line should be clearer. And in this case, it's I believe it's certainly blurred. I will add just from a practical standpoint for one moment that, again, we've had so many meetings compared to other boards. Again, in this case, we had 15 meetings in 2002, which was its first year as the new AMHOM, and 9 meetings in 2023. So 24 total is a substantial amount of effort on the department's standpoint to try and meet the statutory obligations that were set forth working with the board. So I'll stop there for a moment, but hope I answered the question.
Follow up?
No, I'm good for now. Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. Chair.
Thanks. I want to make a point before we proceed. There's been a little bit of misunderstanding. The board's role is not to prepare the short-term, long-term plan. If you read the statute, that's not what it requires. And further to the point, as chair, in the previous session, we worked with DOT around delineating, not really delineating, but simply exposing what the statute actually says in the form of a very detailed matrix that outlines who does what, who's the doer, who's informed by that, who needs to comment on it, and then who needs to be at a higher level accountable for all of that happening. So it was called a RACI chart, which we workshopped that with the board and with DOT. So there's no confusion at this point about, I think, who needs to do what statutorily, because I believe that RACI diagram, which is responsible, accountable, consulted, and informed, that acronym. So we did that work in the background, so I think that's been clarified. So this is not, I don't think this conversation is so much around what the board is expected to do or expected to deliver as much as how the board is assembled. And I would ask if you have any comment on that, please feel free if there's anything that needs to be clarified beyond that on that front.
Chair Kaufman again, Andy Mills. There is actually, I think you could say that, again, how the board appointing power works does create a layer of accountability that may not exist for the board to work with the department. And again, my words, my characterization, but sometimes interactions, and again, very specific interactions, not the entire board, it's been more adversarial than advisory, which is unfortunate. And I think there's a lot of factors behind that. We don't need to get too far into it, but getting back up to why this executive order is in front of you, if there is the governor does not have the ability, like other boards, to work with that board on when there's issues, code of conduct issues, whatever, that does create, a dynamic, I think is the word we're trying to utilize to describe this, that those are intertied. Appointment authority, the accountability, and the deliverable items within statutory requirements. There are, just so I mention it, some items here that the commissioner was pointing out in the February 8th letter that are direct accountable or deliverable from the board. And some of those have not, again, been received since that letter was issued. Certainly some have. So this is not, I think, to again, cast dispersions on the whole board or to try and say that they have not fulfilled any of their portion of it. So wanted to, because I didn't want to take things out of context or paint with too broad a brush.
Thank you. Seems we have a follow-up or a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I apologize as I'm not as familiar with this board, so I'm going to ask a question that might seem a little ill-informed, but are any of these positions confirmable? So do they go through a confirmation process within the legislature?
Again, Andy Mills, through the chair, Senator Tobin, no. None of the appointments on this board are subject to confirmation.
So if I'm reading, follow-up? So if I'm reading the EO correctly, the positions that would be permitted underneath this executive order would make it where it's under one person's purview and take away the voice of the people, which would be those through the two elected individuals who are helping to appoint individuals. I could understand if we were moving toward a confirmationable process so that there could be more public input, more opportunity for the public to engage, instead of moving toward where it's all held within the executive branch. And I understand there might be some other similarities with other DOT-type advisory boards, aviation and roads and highways. However, I have consternation when we take away the voice of the people, which is the elected officials that now have additional opportunity to put more voices in that space. Not necessarily looking for you to confirm or deny my personal approach to it, but that is where I'm having a rub, is I think it's really critical to have the community buy-in. And the community buy-in is through the president of the Senate and through the Speaker of the House.
If I may, through the chair, Senator Tobin, we completely understand. Unfortunately, I believe in observation, we've seen that appointing powers has made things more political than less, which was not intended, I don't believe. And we would get to, at some point, I hope to, I believe Peter Parkerson is on, and he can speak to sort of a different level of the conversation about the constitutionality of powers and how that dynamic is with different boards, and how there's a difference on this and apparently some notable exceptions with the alleged legal memo. I want to just say for the record, having worked with numerous boards and this one in particular, which has largely been has been good with many members, that we do find that even if appointed by the governor, these folks are picked for their expertise. And that expertise in part is spelled out in the statutory language. They're not automatically agreeing with the position of the administration. They are, in many cases, governor's appointments, sending us emails that, again, are suggesting and advising and making recommendations that are not rubber stamps. And so I think I understand the concern there. I would also make sure that I say through experience, and I could provide examples, that we certainly have a diversity of opinion among appointed members by the governor. So, thank you.
Senator Keel?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Mills, I probably should have started by thanking you for your work staffing this board, which I do follow fairly closely. And I've appreciated the department's engagement with them. Could you give us a little rundown on its the history of its predecessor, the MTAB, the Marine Transportation Advisory Board?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, boy, I should have prepared a much thicker packet because, again, there's a storied history to the Marine Transportation Advisory Board. I can tell you that was before my time at DOT, but obviously many of us, especially those that live in Southeast, keep close tabs on what happens with the Alaska Marine Highway System. I can tell you the dynamic that I understand was a precursor to HB 63 sunsetting MTAB and forming AMHOB. And that dynamic was understood to be that the previous structure of MTAB was largely constituency groups and others vying for scheduling changes rather than a much larger look at the system-wide operations, recommendations for scheduling, levels of service. We have certainly made, with the assistance of two contractors, progress towards that long-range planning effort. We did an interim phase one, we're calling it, in August of 23. That was a very large push by staff and consultants. But for purposes of MTAB, I'm happy to go back and document. We've kept all of that archived on the AMHA website. And I know we can delve deeper into that if you'd like to understand the history a bit more, provide it for the context of the committee or public.
Follow up.
Thank you, and I appreciate the the perception of the MTAB in the years just before this board was created by the legislature. But it goes back to the Murkowski administration. And when Governor Murkowski created the MTAB, it was to give DOT advice on the same sorts of things that this board was created to do. And my observation from working in this branch of government was that it gave several commissioners some advice they had no interest in receiving. And members changed quickly. And then it eventually became a group that could have a public hearing on a schedule or something where people didn't have any meaningful input because you had a bunch of folks appointed by recommendation of the commissioner who were going to, frankly, by and large, tell them what they wanted to hear. And so all that was left was for folks to vie for service to their particular community or constituency. There were no critical, and I'll use the classic sense of critical, voices. There were no third-party perspectives or folks who could bring expertise without, what's the word I'm looking for, without worrying about losing their seat. And so from some point in the Palin administration until, probably until the creation of AMHOB, it was a fairly useless body.
So again, through the chair, Senator Keel, I certainly wouldn't characterize it as useless. I believe it was limited utility is maybe the more PC term I've used. But your point is taken.
I'm taking notes, Mr.
Yeah, your point is taken that I believe there was it was unanimous, if I'm not mistaken, on the vote count for HB 63 formulating AMHOB, because everyone, the governor signing it as well, wanted to see this board being functional and providing, again, the expertise and advice that DOT is looking for in the long-range and short-term planning efforts. The reason this executive order is before you today is because we do not feel that that is happening at this moment. And again, I'll turn it over to the commissioner in case there's extra points he wants to make because I've been talking long enough.
Yeah, for the record, Ryan Anderson, and through the chair, Senator Keel, understanding your comments regarding past commissioners, I think those are key points in that I haven't received advice. And that's a challenge for us. And that's what we're trying to get at here today is, when you get to these dynamics of the boards, other boards like the Roads and Highways Advisory Board, for example, multiple resolutions regarding current concerns, topics that then, as a department, we can take and look for solutions for. In this case, we haven't received the advice from the board.
Follow-ups? I'll take a minute in this lull. The content of statute that came from HB 63, my office was quite involved in it when I was in the House. And part of the desire of what we tried to get in there was competency-based requirements for the board. We wanted to be sure that in aggregate that the board had not any one person, but when pulled all together, that the board had the technical competencies around enterprise management, quality management, the different things that help. So the content describing the board may be a little different than in some of the other board creating, a little different in the language around competency for marine operations, the transportation that has elements some elements, at least, of hospitality folded into it. And then the content requiring the long-term, short-term plan, that also might be recognized as a hallmark of my office. And so we put that content in there as well. And the idea was never that the board would create that, but that it would consult advise to help the creation of those plans. I just want to break away a little bit and just ask, how are we doing on the creation of those plans with respect? I mean, we've got the current board and as it's been functioning. If you could just give me a bit of an update on those long-term, short-term plans as required by that same statute that created the board.
For the record, Andy Mills. Mr. Chairman, so on the efforts by AMHOB, AMHS, and DOT in concert with consultants, we do have, of course, the long-range planning phase one effort that was accomplished in August of 2023. And that was a consequence of a bit of a reset from the first year with AMHOB, where call it a false start or something that was not yielding the result that was desired or called for. And so 2023 was really a year where we attempted to put, again, dedicate a substantial amount of hours to getting the long-range planning effort righted and moving. And the plan right now is to have phase two in spring, and I believe the final long-range planning effort completed in August of 2024. The board has always said that they plan on the short-term planning effort to be sort of nested underneath, calling from the long-range planning effort. So that will happen, we believe, shortly after the long-range plan is available and ready for sort of that follow-on planning effort to have. We already have a short-term planning effort, but this is a codified, board-informed short-term planning effort that feeds from the long-range vision that is established. There are other powers and duties. Again, the board shall provide advice and recommendations to the commissioner of DOT concerning the operations and management of AMHS, including advice and recommendations regarding business to enhance revenue and reduce costs, personnel management, commercial services operations. I could go in and list, in this case, AS 1965-180E, and there are other elements here. We don't currently have any recommendations or advice along those lines, which, again, I wanted to reference a specific item in statute that we don't yet have something to work from in that regard. So, again, all eyes up for us are on the long-range planning effort, because therein lies the success of what Senator Keel said, which is not having the system fits and starts in different directions. Lay a path that's going to be durable, at least in the quality of the product.
Thank you. Any follow-up? I just want to note, we do have Parker Patterson, Assistant Attorney General, Department of Law, and Megan Wallace, Chief Counsel, Legislative Legal Services, on the line for question. Do we have any legal questions? Senator Meyer, your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As evidence, you know, in the legal memo we received, I just would like to hear a little bit more from probably starting with Mr. Patterson on the constitutionality of having a board with voting members appointed from the legislature housed in the executive branch.
Patterson?
Hello. Parker Patterson. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. We can hear you.
Excellent. Okay, so for the record, Parker Patterson, Senior Assistant Attorney General, Department of Law, through the chair, Senator. So this is actually a question that Department of Law has had an opinion on for several decades regarding these appointments to executive branch boards by members of the legislature. And going back quite a while, it's been the opinion of the Department of Law that these types of appointments are violate the separation of powers because they allow a different branch of government to appoint individuals who will be then staffing units of the executive branch. It's pretty clear in Alaska Supreme Court decisions that the power to appoint is an executive power and not a legislative power. And so when you have confirmations, those are because of a specific cross-delegation, right? We have a system of limited mixed separation of powers. In other words, you'll get these little tidbits that are given to another branch, and they can operate within the scope of that delegation. And so here you have the legislature is given the power to confirm the heads of departments and boards that are head departments and a few other specific circumstances. And you can't expand that power to start, and I mean the legislature cannot expand that power to start appointing, confirming, much less appointing individuals to executive branch units. And so, you know, this goes further than the confirmation power, which is the granted power for department heads, and goes one step further, in fact, two steps further, by going to direct appointment and then appointing officials of the executive branch who are not department heads or part of the scope of individuals who may be confirmed by the legislature. And so this is a circumstance in which this is a core function of executive branch of the executive branch and the governor's abilities. So to that extent, the Department of Law has said that, you know, especially when you have a board like this, which as is set forth in AS 1965-180, does draft and submit the strategic plan. And so this is a board that is at the heart, the center of the governor's policymaking operations with regard to the Alaska Marine Highway. So this is one of those core sort of entities within the policymaking function that has to be accountable to the governor. And so that is where we stand with regard to the separation of powers arguments from Department of Law's point of view.
Thank you. Follow up? All right. We have another question. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Patterson, it may be a bad phone line. It almost sounded like you said confirm with an M. Can you, as I look at 1965-180, I missed the power to confirm the part of the executive branch. Can you point me to the text I'm missing there, or was it just a bad phone line?
Through the chair, again, Parker Patterson, Senator. No, what I'm addressing is that there's a constitutional power to confirm certain individuals. Beyond that, the legislature is not able to confirm, much less appoint. Right, confirmation is a lesser power. It says the governor makes the appointment, and then the legislature can either say yes or no to the governor's pick, and that's in the Constitution with regard to department heads. This power, which is in this statute 1965-180, gives the legislature an appointment, a greater power than the constitutional confirmation, onto an executive branch unit. And so this goes far beyond the narrow scope which the Constitution grants for confirmation of certain discrete positions within the executive branch. And that is why, from our point of view, the Department of Law believes that the power to confirm the power to appoint individuals to executive branch boards is beyond, when it's not permitted in the Constitution, it's beyond the legislature's power under separation of powers.
Follow up?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm not looking to turn this into the Judiciary Committee, but because we have here an advisory group, a group that can inquire and advise, I think is the phrase used from a 2016 Attorney General's opinion, but that does not independently exercise the powers of the executive branch. It's not the executive power of the state that is at issue. It is giving advice.
Thank you. With that, I would like to bring in Megan Wallace. She's online, and Ms. Wallace, if you can just if you have any comment or any perspective to offer on this discussion at this point.
Hi, this is Megan Wallace, Legal Services. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. Loud and clear.
Okay, great. With respect to, as a follow-up to the comment from Senator Keel, I think that at this point, the only addition to what Mr. Parker had to offer is just, in my opinion, as I think that the legal opinion from our office attempts to outline, is that the separation of powers issue, if it were to get litigated, and mind you, this issue has not been litigated. This board is not under litigation, and it's not been challenged, and a court has not rendered that there is a separation of powers issue. But if we're speaking about, speculation or hypothetical that would occur and what a court might do, it seems as though the separation of powers question is going to turn likely on the advisory nature of the board and the question of whether these members are exercising an executive function within an executive branch unit or whether they are serving a merely advisory capacity. And with respect to the preparation and submission of a strategic plan in AS 1965-180C, it's also important to not leave out that the board is required to prepare and submit to the department and the governor for review a strategic plan. And so, in my opinion, the duties and the powers that are outlined in 180 are, you know, to prepare something for review, to establish regional advisory committees, to provide recommendations and advice, to issue reports to the executive branch and to the governor. And so those powers and duties do tend to feel advisory in nature as opposed to a substantive exercise of executive function. And so a court will have to look at whether or not, since there's not an exercise, arguably there's not an exercise of executive function, whether it's been still permissible for the legislature to appoint certain members to this board as the legislature directed through the recent, you know, establishment of this board. And finally, just in terms of any debate about whether or not the legislature should consider acting on or disapproving an executive order, those reasons or grounds can be for whatever reason. It certainly don't have to be as a result of a legal issue. And the discussion that the committee's had today in terms of the policy reasons are sufficient for the legislature to decide whether it believes that the changes proposed by the governor are acceptable or not.
Thank you, Ms. Wallace. Do we have any follow-up questions? Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Wallace, I'm aware that the legislature has had members on various task forces, for example, the Food Security Task Force that recently concluded. There's been some other task forces where legislative members have been on as ex officio non-voting members. I am not aware of any other boards that have either a legislative member or legislative appointment for a long-term board. Are you aware of any other boards that have members appointed in that manner that have full voting powers with the other members?
Senator Meyer, through the chair, when I was doing some research for the opinion that I wrote, we identified the Citizens Advisory Commission on Federal Management Areas in Alaska. I believe that advisory commission may have been repealed and that used to be set up in that way in terms of the presiding officers appointing members. And I believe that the Alaska Minerals Commission has members appointed by the legislature. And as you noted, they're just a general understanding of members who sit on boards in an advisory capacity.
Do we have any follow-up? Any further questions for any of our testifiers today? Senator.
Thank you. And thank you. I appreciate this. Again, I'm operating a little bit out of my wheelhouses. This isn't necessarily an entity that affects my district directly. However, many of us use the marine highway systems. I myself have fond memories of being in Juno jumpers and going to compete against the Sitka skippers. I am curious, though, as I know we're trying to be judicious in how we talk about this and being very cognizant that there are folks who are currently serving in these capacities, and we want to ensure that we are not imputing them or making them feel as though they have not served with distinction for the state and within this particular entity. But I can't help but notice that the current vice chair and chair are those appointed folks, one from the speaker and one from the Senate president. And I have some consternation about changing the composition of a particular entity by removing the chair and the vice chair, the leadership that seem to be in those appointed positions. And also notice that the person who is sitting there from the Department of Transportation, there's been a lot of conversation around this particular individual and some of the issues that we're experiencing in other parts of the Department of Transportation. So you've mentioned that there is some issues with how the board is operating currently, and I'm just very curious of how those will be clarified if we change the composition. Will there be, how will this shift improve the current functions by removing what looks like to be at least two folks who are holding leadership positions, and potentially with another individual where there is some issues that I have heard regarding their particular performance?
Through the chair, Senator Tobin, thank you for the question. On this one, the appointing power change that would be enacted if the EO goes through is not a de facto change in the current leadership. In fact, it's a change in the ability for the governor to bring accountability where there is not an active participation or a result, really, on something. So I don't think that there's a direct line to say that both members currently in those positions would automatically need to change. The board would still need to have its own election or the own chair and vice chair vote. And it was, I will say, from the February 2023, the dynamics in the room were very awkward in what happened there. And rather than going into the detail here, I just want to say it was very uncomfortable in the room for the public and many members on how that happened. Certainly, we did suggest some changes procedurally to try and avoid that, but those were not acted on in the same way. And so I anyway, would just say that I think, again, appointing power difference does change the dynamic and how people would act from an accountability standpoint. So there could be that dynamic, which doesn't necessarily need to involve a swap there. Can you reiterate the second point of your question? It was?
I think you've answered my question regarding what would happen to those positions.
Thank you. If there's no other burning questions, I do want to open up for public testimony just a bit while we have this opportunity. So I will, everyone good with them? Okay, so I will now open public testimony on EO 131. Just to check, is there anyone in the room who would like to testify? None noted. And do we have anyone at an LIO or on the phone who would like to testify? It seems we have no one on the phone or online. So, with that, I will close public testimony. So at this point, are there any further points of conversation, discussion, or questions? Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to thank Commissioner Anderson and the department for the work that they have been doing with this board, because it is materially different than past administrations, past departments of transportation leadership. And when I say materially different, it's just better. This is a department that has been listening to a board that is working. I had, Mr. Chairman, this summer the opportunity to join parts of U.S. Transportation Secretary Buttigieg's visit to Alaska. And the weather being what it is, I got to join him on a four-hour ferry ride up Lincoln Canal, which had not been part of the plan, and I think his team was shocked that the secretary was going to be in one place or one moving point for 4 hours. They couldn't imagine it. But it made a huge difference in the conversations, because usually when you go to these meetings, and it doesn't matter who the president is with the cabinet secretary, everybody does their 2.5 minutes, and the cabinet secretary says, thank you so much. Here are the things our administration is doing that you're all going to love. Got to go by. And there's never a conversation. But we had 35, 45 minutes on the side of the bridge with Senator Murkowski and Representative Stutes and the secretary. I got to be there along with the head of Southeast Conference. And the secretary asked a whole lot of questions. He dug in. He dug deep. And some of them were pointed questions. And we had the opportunity to say, you know, one of the things that we can tell you to reassure you, Mr. Secretary, that we're not going to get in a hole with maintenance of our ferries in the future, that we're not going to make decisions that flip back and forth with the tides on $100 or $120 million infrastructure investments, is that we've got this Marine Highway Operations Board, and they are exercising independent judgment and giving advice. And part of that is that we had a commissioner who seemed to be listening. I haven't agreed with everything they've recommended to you. And I told the secretary that too, as evidence that this is a group that is working hard and thinking hard. I'd like it better if they agreed with me on everything. You know, even the chairman disagreed with me once. If in future this takes effect, this executive order takes effect, and in future if we end up with a governor I don't have deep trust in, I don't know how I make the same kind of statement to a future Secretary of Transportation that we've got an independent set of people looking hard and working hard on these issues. So, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the indulgence to make a little speech there, but the story is telling. I think the current structure is important to this board functioning at a high level, and thus the ferry system moving forward as the most effective and efficient system we can provide Alaskans.
Thank you. Any other questions? I'll just close in saying that, you know, that the marine highway system represents opportunity, tremendous liability as well. And so I think that one reason why we all have to think long and hard about its management, its future, you know, there's significant risk to the operating environment of a ferry out in the Gulf of Alaska or elsewhere in its operating area. So I think it's worthy of trying to consider the what we can do to assure, you know, its operation and safe operation. I too feel that we've made tremendous strides in the management of the ferry system with bringing on a new director who seems to be the right person, right time, with the right ideas. I'm thankful for that. And I think that the work that is being done to develop the long-term, short-term plans so that I believe that, you know, tangible progress has been made. But we just need to be sure that we stay on track. So we're getting to the end of our committee time, and just want to ask, do we have any other comments from our testifiers or any final points that you want to make?
Yeah, Chair Kaufman, for the record, Ryan Anderson. Yeah, I believe everyone wants the same thing here for the Marine Highway System. Everyone wants to see the improvements. We keep hearing about service, and we keep hearing about reliability, and that's where we want to stay focused. I agree. We don't want to go back and forth on decisions and do those types of things. We want a steady way forward. And I do believe we have the right people to make this happen. You know, appreciate the time today. This idea of the board and improving the dynamics and really having that opportunity to accelerate things. I think that's what you're hearing from us. There's a lot of good ideas out there. The board has brought good ideas to the table. We just got to move these things forward and do it quickly. There's a time clock. There's no doubt that we have opportunities right now. And what you've seen from DOT is we have been out there making decisions ahead of the board because we've had to. And so that's where we would like the board to be, right there with us and pushing on these things and going ahead together. So with that, appreciate the time today.
Thank you very much. So we're nearing the end of our committee, and we do need to move on. And again, I will reopen public testimony on this when we bring this bill back before the committee this coming Thursday at 1:30 p.m. And so I encourage anyone who does want to offer their opinion or perceptions to call in at that time. And again, you can also send in written testimony to stra@akleg.gov. And if you have comments, we'd like to hear them. So in wrap up, thank you, committee members and our testifiers, for being here. We appreciate the help. We also want to thank the committee members, LIO support staff, who have helped today's committee meeting run as smooth as it did. Our next regularly scheduled meeting will be Thursday, February 22nd. And this meeting is now adjourned slightly ahead of time at 2:54 p.m. Thank you.